Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, December 26th, 2013, and I hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas. I hope you did, Al.
I actually had a pretty good Christmas. You know, at my age, that's kind of a rare situation, but I actually had a good Christmas. I went over to some, I was invited over to the home of some people that attend a church I go to, and we had six or eight people. I don't know, there might have been 10 of us there all together. I don't remember. Every one of them were members of the church, and some of them were orphans like me, and went over there and just had a wonderful dinner, but mostly it was a matter of conversation. We've got some people who can think and talk. And I went over there. I wouldn't care if they served us a happy meal. I didn't care if we, with a, side order of fries or something like that. That would have suited me just fine. I was there mainly for good. We'd finish dinner and then start talking. And we really just have some extraordinary conversations. I enjoyed it. More than any thanks or Christmas I've had in a long time. Just very, very nice. I enjoyed it. So how was yours? You went to visit family?
Yes, I did, down in Ocean City, Maryland, and it was very nice to be there, out of the snow, out of the cold. But we had some fairly warm temperatures on the East Coast. When I was arriving, it was like we had 65-degree days. And so very nice Christmas, a quiet but nice. Different also. And I do have one question for you, Al.
Yep.
You said for your age.
Oh, you get older. I mean, Christmas, I've been there, done that. You know, you get to my age and the rest of it. And Christmas is no longer, it is really just another day for me. All right. When you're a kid and when you're younger, Christmas is final exams for the year. And you'd better have a Merry Christmas or you'll strangle somebody. You understand? If you don't have a great Christmas, it's evidence that your whole year was worthless. It's like final exams. But you get older and you get over that and you get, it's not just nice. It was comfortable.
I think one of the most heartwarming stories I've heard was a little girl. She was 8 years old and she lived in West Reading, Pennsylvania. And she had a rare case of leukemia. And, you know, like the Make-A-Wish Foundation, she had, she wanted people to come and sing Christmas carols. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people came, and they sang outside her window. And she went to heaven on Christmas morning. And so I thought that was probably one of the most touching stories I've heard, and I just wanted to share that.
No, I agree. That'll make your eyes mist over.
It did. It did. And she had some other wishes that, you know, they were able to make come true. But, you know, for those thousands and thousands of people, I think the number that showed was like 10,000 people to sing carols outside her window. And I thought, oh, those people who showed up and took the time out to do that, they did something good. Let's see what gold. Was gold any good today?
It wasn't great, but it was okay.
It didn't bring a tear to my eye.
No.
Gold up $7 today at 12:13. You can call it whatever you want. You know, everybody's saying short covering and blah, blah, blah. We have light trading. And, you know, during the holidays, there isn't any one, you know, rhyme or reason that makes the markets do what they do. They're certainly a lot easier to manipulate because it's the low volumes. And silver, though, they didn't get it up. It was up over 20 for part of the day. Finishing out at $19.96, up 36 cents. Platinum was up $24 today at $13.67, along with palladium up 6 at $7.05. Oil, oh, that's been really moving up, $99.65, up 43 points today. And let's see, the markets had a hullabaloo market today. It's a hullabaloo. The Dow hits its 50th record high close of 2013, adding 122 points today. And the S&P 500 closes at a record high, and, of course, the NASDAQ at a 13-year high. So the Dow, 16,479. The NASDAQ, 4167. And the S&P at 1842. And what's interesting is the 10-year yield, that's hovering right at 3%, 2.99. And I do believe it went over 3 on the day during some point of the day. It, let's see if I can see. Well, it closed at 2.99. So, and the currency markets, I need to get updated on the currency market for the, if I can bring that up here quickly, because my easy to go to record on the dollar just isn't working very well. You have the euro.
Mine is up at 80.48. Well, it's actually down 0.006%, but it's allegedly at 80.48. There's another one there at Kitco where they've been locked at 80.06.
Yeah, that's
probably
no good.
No,
that's
wrong.
Good. Yeah. They just got a poor link. But the euro was trading. That's still hovering at some pretty high numbers. They expect it to go a little bit higher, but not much. Not much. So that's pretty it in a 1.369 for the euro. So copper's doing well. Of course, the big talk in all the mainstream media is how poorly gold has done this year.
Yep.
So you're going to hear a lot of it next week.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, there's no getting around it. It was a devastating year. That's just the truth of the matter. But, on the other hand, you buy low and you sell high. You know, how much lower can it go? Everything indicates, you know, now's the time to buy. And given that nothing stays stable for long, certainly not in the financial realm, gold's gone down this far, it's almost certain it can't go down any further. And it's highly probable that its trajectory is going to turn and start going up. So we'll watch and see. But in any case, it's a great buying opportunity. That's what it comes down to right now.
Well, they now have Twitter valued at $40 billion. Twitter.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, hello. Twitter, $40 billion. It's doubled since it's opened in the markets, since the IPO. What's that based on? A bunch of people writing stupid notes to one another.
I understand.
I mean, I went to Twitter once, Al, and I went to some movie star's Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at this. I mean, they have 40 million people Twittering. I mean, it's like, you've got to be kidding. Doesn't anybody have anything else to do?
You know, it's not just doesn't anyone else have anything, something else to do. When you think about the numbers of people that have been attracted to and essentially seduced by Twitter, wait, I'm going to write to my friends that I just bought a new red pen. Wait, I'm going to write to my friends that I'm writing with blue ink. You know, these people are dissipating an enormous amount of time on Twitter, and that means they're not dissipating very much time trying to study serious subjects and really learn something that might do them some good. It's like an extraordinary mechanism for gossip. I know that sometimes important information gets communicated by Twitter. I know that Congress occasionally does something right. I know that too. All right? But on average, it's just a strange little addiction. And we live in times when I don't know that an addiction like that is, you know, it certainly can't be allowed to get out of hand. If you want to use Twitter once in a while, fine, use it. I don't have an objection to it. But if you're going to dedicate a couple hours of your life each day to Twittering, reading or writing, you know, your time is better spent. We live in interesting times, and you should take an interest in them and try to educate yourself to see if you can enhance your chances to survive and prosper in these interesting times. If you don't want to make that effort, you shouldn't be surprised if perhaps things don't go all that well for you.
You know what's interesting now is when I was visiting family, we were at a function. The one son, my cousin's son, he's 20, and his girlfriend, and we went to her parents' house, and I've been there a couple of years ago. And a couple of years ago, they were involved in, you know, some sort of game on that was on TV, and they were up laughing, talking, communicating. You know, it was a joy. We, as adults, you know, enjoyed watching them and so forth. The night we were there, we went back this time, and this time, there was probably 5-6 boys, and the ages ranged anywhere from 14 to 20, 21. They're in college, the ones that are in college. Very smart, I mean, incredibly brilliant boys. And they all had their cell phones, and not one word was said for hours.
I understand.
They just sat around. They were all playing some game. I don't know if they were interacting with each other with this game or what, but they were just sitting there with their phones doing what they, not a peep. In some respect, that's good.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of people say, you know, we don't even need Ritalin. We just give these kids a cell phone. Let them text. They'll shut up. They won't do anything.
But I don't know. I just, probably no one there thought anything different. There was a couple comments said, you know, what are they doing and blah blah blah, they're so quiet. And I mean, you didn't even know they were
there.
That
would never happen in my day, Melody.
No,
we're sitting around like that, we'd be getting drunk and boisterous and who knows, chasing wild women or something like that. But we wouldn't fritter our time away just typing on a little tiny keyboard
at that young age, Al. 20?
Oh, 20, absolutely.
But no, these kids are, I mean, these kids are smart, smart, smart.
Some of them are, absolutely.
Well, these kids are very smart, and they impress me. I mean, they teach themselves how to play musical instruments. The one boy received for a gift, and we should probably talk about other things other than our holiday. But it's this instrument where it has two receivers. It's like a block of wood, and I don't even know what it's made out of. And there's a metal bar that goes up on one end, and then on the other end, there's like a U-shaped bar. And you put your fingers in there, and you make notes. And you can play it. It's an instrument that you can play with your fingers. And it's really weird.
Well, I understand.
And, you know, and he'll teach himself how to play it.
Well, that's a great thing. And that is a great thing because children who are capable of educating themselves are embracing what is perhaps the most important talent you can have in the current society. Because things are changing so fast, there are people who graduate with degrees in chemistry from college. And their degree, the, what they learned in the first two, maybe even 3 years of their college education is already obsolete. The technology is advancing so fast that what you learned in your freshman year, by the time you graduate, that's old news, doesn't even count anymore, may not even be true. How do you keep up in a world that's moving as fast, advancing as fast as this one is? And the answer is you must be capable of educating yourself. You've got to learn to appreciate how to read and how to write and how to do things with your mind. And you can sit there and if you're capable of studying and educating yourself, you can keep up. You can compete. You can stay with this. You can, you can stay in this game. If you can't educate yourself, you're going to be left behind. And the truth of the matter is so many people are just naturally unable to keep up, don't have enough intelligence, don't have time to study, don't have the inclination to get crack the books or get up on the internet or do something. Even, I don't know, maybe even Twitter. Maybe there's information to be gained Twittering. But you got to do something to keep up. And if you're not willing to do that, you're going to be left behind. And unfortunate, but the world has become extraordinarily competitive on an intellectual basis. Not just on a physical basis, not even on a wealth basis. I mean, if you got the brains to do things, you can do extraordinary things. And if you don't, you're vulnerable.
I guess it's all much better to Twitter than it is to twerker.
Yeah, that may be true. I don't know. That may be to twerk. Twerk.
To
twerking
twerk.
Is what you're talking about.
Twerking,
shall
yes.
we Twitter or shall
Should
we twerk?
Twerk?
That's the big question facing American youth today. Twitter or twerk?
Twerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but some kids could educate themselves, and if they can, and they really enjoy the pursuit of knowledge, then they have an opportunity. There's a good chance that they can do well in this society.
Well, just as a quick note before we head to break today, there is a Wall Street advisor that came out today, and he says, hey, get prepared. He says, there's a lot of, along with himself and many other economists, that their concerns expressed in these dire warnings that the growing debt and deficit spending is a tax on those holding dollars.
Yeah.
The devaluation of the U.S. dollar risks the dollar status as the reserve currency of the world. Obamacare was the worst legislation in the past 75 years. Socialism is on the rise, and the NSA really is breaking vast portions of the Constitution. And, he doesn't believe in the Armageddon
Bible?
No, of the... Oh, what was that? The one movie by, where we're totally complete devastation, but he definitely believes there's major problems that need
big
to be
trouble
fixed.
Coming our way, not big catastrophe trouble. Necessarily, but significant problems.
Exactly, the potential for a financial apocalypse. So
I agree.
He don't think it'll result in Armageddon, but. Here you have Wall Street, several advisors and economists recommending also guns and ammo for protection in a collapse.
No, I understand. The church I go to down here in Texas, this is interesting. Well, I'll tell you, we got a heck of a church. This is an extraordinary church. We have a great, great minister who tries to communicate the truth, and he really does have, in my opinion, the Spirit of God is closely associated with this man. This guy is good. Most churches bore me. I don't even waste my time going, this guy's good. I'm going to make you bet that at least 20% of the people in the audience are packing. All right, concealed carry. I'll bet you at least a fifth of the people in that church are packing guns on their waist or around their ankle or whatever. And there's some great people down here. A lot of people listen to that. Oh, that's crazy talk. No, these are good, intelligent, honest, dedicated, passionate people. They see what's happening. They are trying to protect themselves. And I delight in it. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Melody, do you have a special for these people for a post-Christmas special or a pre-New Year's Day special or perhaps a Thursday special? Do you have a special for them, or are they going to have to wait a day or two?
Oh, they're going to have to wait a day or two. Okay. We're getting out. We do have some great specials coming up. I do believe we have a few of the Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens still available, that great batch that I had brought in. Beautiful coins, great dates. They just need to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And for the newsletter that they can sign up for, to go to the website dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we are not producing a newsletter until January 7th. We're just taking
the
a little
7th?
Bit of... Mm-hmm. Which is the week we come back.
Are we leaving?
Well, when everyone comes back, the January
2nd. Okay, so it's not the week we come back, it's the week the audience comes back.
It's just next weekend. Since we don't do it on the weekend, it has to be the following Monday.
Okay.
Which takes us up to the 7th, I do believe. We're not doing one this week. And then next week is the first. But anyway, this doesn't need to be discussed on the air. Anyway, and if you have any questions for today's program, questions at dgscoins.com, questions at dgscoins.com. And we do have a couple of questions that came in probably from late last week, if you'd like to take them now, Alfred.
I guess we could take them now, or we could wait another week, maybe. But we might as well do them now. What the heck?
Well, this came in late on the 20th, so that's why it was the end of the program, and then we were gone. Is the Target's recent $40 billion stolen credit cards a means to torpedo American economy since it is already sinking? May these types of activities increase, totally destroy the U.S., including additional disclosures about NSA?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's one of these things where are the intended, what is the intended effect? That's part of what he's saying. Are they intended, is the theft of 40 million credit cards, is that intended to damage the economy, or is it just some people who are greedy criminal and they went looking for 100 cards, they found 40 million much to their surprise, and now they may not even know what to do with them? There are allegations that, in fact, the cards have been stolen by hackers located in foreign countries. They may not even be in this country. I don't know what their intent is. I would speculate that their intent is to just make a fast buck. All right? And they don't much care whether the economy is damaged or the economy sinks or whatever. That's not their concern. Their concern is to try to make a fast buck some way, somehow, with these 40 million credit cards. But it does show us, it demonstrates the vulnerability of almost any form of digital currency. And that includes bitcoins. Right? If you're keeping your money or your credit rating or whatever you think of as money, if you're keeping it on credit cards and it's in a digital format, you've just seen how someone, some organization, it might be some individual, it might be 10 kids. It might be 10 kids working, going to school, going to grade school over in St. Petersburg in Russia or something like that. And they've just, hey, why do I do this? And they figured out a way of doing this. Who knows? It means that all of your digital currency is in jeopardy. And you can't just steal 40 million credit cards from an outfit like Target, and suppose that it happened because Target doesn't have adequate defenses. I'm not saying Target had top-of-the-line defenses to protect credit card information. I'm not saying that, but still, they had to have some pretty serious security measures there. And the reality is that any digital security mechanism can be hacked into. And if that security mechanism is protecting some digits, some digital ones and zeros on a hard drive, apparently you can extract that. There's ways of getting at it and making it disappear. There are ways of sophisticated theft and robbery, and they all depend on the idea of having a digital currency. Now, let's suppose that we were living at a time 50 years ago, 70 years ago, whatever, when we still had gold and silver coin in this country, and somebody figured out a way to get your information out of the bank. And they figured out a way how to get the information on 40 million people out of the banks. All right, they've got the information. Now what? Are they going to come knocking on every bank's door and say, hi, I'm Joe Jablonski, and I'd like to withdraw my 10 ounces of gold out of your bank vault? That kind of theft that's possible with digital currency is far beyond anything that is even conceivable when you're using a currency that has tangible value, a currency like gold, silver. It has a physical reality. It can't be moved over the internet. No, there's a lesson there. There's not necessarily, you know, it's not, I don't expect that lesson to change the world necessarily, but it's the sort of thing where people can begin to see, wait a second, it makes a little difference whether I store my wealth in the form of digits on a hard drive or if I store it in the form of gold or silver or some other tangible product. And it makes a difference. There is no absolute solution that will protect anything you've got from theft. That's an absolute fact. But when you can see 40 million people threatened with robbery at the same time, you've got to say, listen, this is a strange system, and I don't know if I want to trust my wealth to it. So are they trying to sink our economy? I wouldn't think so. I don't think that's the objective. I think it's just a question of they just got spectacularly lucky from their perspective, and they got 40 million credit cards and whatever, and now what?
I think what you could find come out of this is perhaps change in some regulations. I've heard some reporting where there was limitations on what you could use, what you could withdraw, and so forth that supposedly was brought from this target. So perhaps this story could be used, and certainly it is a story where it would make, you know, if they could introduce some sort of legislation for the banks to protect the banks, a lot of people would say, yeah, and that's going to protect me. I don't want to be one of those 40 million people and worry about having somebody use and take all my use my credit cards and all my other information. It's just not about these credit cards. It's about Social Security numbers. It's about your whole identity. So,
well, like I say, when you do this in a digital yeah. format, I don't care how clever you are. There's someone who's clever enough to figure a way to bypass your digital defense mechanisms to protect these ones and zeros on somebody's hard drive. And incidentally, when we talk about 40 million of these credit cards being captured thanks to Target, how many people do you think there are in this country that have credit cards? 200 million?
Oh. Well,
not everybody.
And then how
not
many?
Not everybody has them. A lot of people have debit cards, but they don't have credit cards.
True, but then you always hold more than one credit card, too.
I get that. But just in broad strokes, mm-hmm. we are talking about the possibility that 40 million out of perhaps 200 million people who have credit cards suffered some sort of a robbery. We're talking about 20%, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 20% of the people who have credit cards got robbed last weekend. 20% of the whole country. You look at that and you got to sit back and say, wait a second, I don't know if I want to trust my wealth to a system where 20% of the people can be robbed, you know, on one day or one week. I don't know. Is that what you want to do? And then there's another point also that's illustrated. 40 million people's data has been compromised. I don't know how many of them were, in fact, robbed, if any, but their data has been compromised, and who knows how much wealth has been moved on this thing. But it does illustrate another point. Let's suppose, for the sake of argument, that your friendly folks in Washington, D.C. decided they really, really, really needed the money you've got that's in your bank account, for example. And given that the bank account is there in digital format, how many people could the government rob this afternoon if they decided to push a button? Just how safe is your money, your currency that you have in digital format in a bank account? You've just seen that, you know, some semi-talented kids, young men, whatever, can steal 40 million credit cards in a short period of time. What do you think the NSA can steal? Or the CIA? Or the Department of whatever? You know? Federal Reserve. It's just another one of these illustrations that you got to be careful and you have to think about. You have to at least consider. You don't need to be paranoid. I'm not trying to sell fear, and I'm not trying to tell people to be paranoid per se, but it's not unreasonable to factor these kinds of considerations into your thinking. And it may be that you're going to keep your credit card from now until your great-grandchildren are getting married, all right? That may be just fine. But it wouldn't be a bad idea, just in case, wouldn't be a bad idea to put some of your wealth in a tangible form, a tangible media that is not subject to digital hacking and digital theft.
We got another question in. Again, this was on the 20th, and that was the day Harry Reid had gone to the he was hospitalized after falling ill in the morning, and he had just turned 74, and he was going to remain in the hospital as a precaution. I'm assuming he's out by now. And the question is about Harry Reid. Are the powers to be ready to dump the senator due to his poor performance?
Hard to say. I don't doubt, you know, who are the powers that be? I don't doubt that there are people in his party, people in the Congress who are not in the same political party, people in the administration who'd like to get rid of him. But that's true for anyone who sits in Congress. So what powers are, who are the powers that be that you're talking about? There's a lot of powers that be, and they don't always agree. You know, some of them are Republicans, some of them are Democrats, some of them are, who knows, Illuminati, some of them are New World Order, some of them are bankers. There's as much competition among these powers as there is frustration among the American people. Will they try to dump Harry Reid? No. I think time is going to do that. Time will dump all of us sooner or later.
Hey, 74. You know, he wanted an early holiday. I think they were actually heading into some sort of a vote or something that Friday afternoon. So
he used this as an excuse
I don't know, but I'm just
Not impossible.
You know, there's just another side of the story that could be.
You know, there may be as many people in the powers that be who want to get rid of Harry Reid as there are in the powers that be that depend on him and say, Harry, you got to do something. You got to go to the hospital. You got to stop this thing. We can't allow this law to be passed. Go to the hospital. Fall down. They'll believe it. You know, which powers that be are we talking about? I'm not doing it. I can tell you that. And I don't think Melody has anything to do with Harry Reid's situation, and I doubt that anyone in this audience does. I don't think the question is what are the powers that be doing? What are they doing? Is that the question, or is the question what are you and I doing? You know, what can we do? And should we just give up hope and surrender the world to the powers that be, or should we jump into this mess and start pushing and shoving ourselves and see if we can make something happen that might be better for the rank and file American people, for the vast majority, middle class in particular? I'd like to figure out something we can do for the benefit of the middle class, because I don't have great respect for the people on welfare at the low end of the scale. I don't have respect hardly at all for the parasites at the top of the economic structure. Right? Most of those people up at the top are really parasites. They're psychopaths. They are capturing enormous sums of money, but they're not doing it because they produce things. They're every bit as parasitical as people trying to live on welfare. Just say, make it. I don't want to work. I'm just going to live on welfare. There are parasites at both the top and the bottom of the economic spectrum, and there's a high concentration of them. And who do they predate on? Who do they feed off of? And the answer is they predate on and feed off of the middle class. The middle class are the people that are actually out there making things. People at the very top, people at the very bottom tend to be hustlers, con artists. They're not producing anything. They're functioning as parasites. And I understand people have a difficult time. I'm not trying to be critical per se. I'm not pointing fingers and saying certainly not at the poor, but there is a moral problem. We've got one group of people that are primary producers, and they are the middle class, the upper middle class. They're the people that are producing things, and that's the class that is being whittled away in our society. We're losing that middle class. They're the ones that make things. They make cars and planes and boats All right? They grow food, and they're the ones that are disappearing. And what are they being replaced by? Bankers, right? People at the Federal Reserve and people down on welfare. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Got one little brief and semi-peculiar report. Here's something from device.com, and it's DVICE.com. They deal with interesting electronic and, I don't know, events, news, technology. They've got an article here that's under the headline, Thermal Imaging Shows That Reindeer Really Do Have Glowing Noses. So they did thermal camera. They used a thermal camera, which measures heat, as I'm sure most of you understand. And they took pictures of reindeer in the cold, and they recognized, and it turns out that the reindeer's noses are they show up brighter and bright red on thermal imaging cameras. So we're just passing the information along to show you that maybe there's some truth to the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer story. Maybe it's not just myth. Maybe Rudolph did have a little bit of a red nose. What else, Melody? How about the oil industry?
How about it? We have oil approaching $100 a barrel. I would think gasoline prices should begin to move up. They certainly haven't gone down. They've been holding steady.
Well, here's an article from the Washington Examiner that says oil industry starts push to end ban on exports of crude oil. The American Petroleum Institute says the U.S. energy boom has made a 40-year crude oil export ban unnecessary. It's the oil and gas industry is seizing on recent comments by Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz to push for an end to the United States' 40-year-old ban on crude oil exports. We're pumping so much crude oil or finding it with fracking and whatever, but the supply of crude oil is growing in this country, and therefore the industry, which has been restricted from selling to foreign buyers for 40 years, they want an end to that restriction, and they want to be able to sell on the international market. Now, there's a lot of implications here. If the ban on selling United States crude oil to foreign countries is lifted, what'll it mean? It'll mean more competition to purchase U.S. crude oil as foreign countries seek to buy U.S. crude. That's all they're going to. And if they eliminate this restriction where domestic producers can't sell overseas, there'll be more foreign buyers. And what do you suppose will happen? What will more competition to purchase U.S. crude oil mean for domestic oil prices? It'll mean they must go up. There's more foreign countries. Insofar as domestic oil producers can primarily sell only to domestic customers, and they're generating more crude oil than they know what to do with, they've got to either expand their market or they're going to see their price go down here in the United States. The industry doesn't want to see its price go down, of course, and they'd like to see it even go up, and that means they need more buyers, and the way they get that is to terminate this 40-year-old ban. Huh? Now, question is, if the ban is terminated and domestic oil producers are able to sell their oil to foreign countries and we have more competition to buy American oil, will it result in a rising price in crude oil and then gasoline and so on? The answer is almost certainly yes. And if so, will rising energy prices threaten the fragile U.S. economy? And the answer is right now, if it happened right now, yeah, probably would. So the next question is, will the government allow U.S. crude oil to be sold to foreign countries while the economy is still struggling? Will the government actually pass some new rules and regulations, say, all right, let's terminate that 40-year ban? And I'd be inclined to say no, they wouldn't. But on the other hand, the Secretary of the Department of Energy says, well, he thinks it's a good idea. Now, I don't think he could advance that idea. Let's terminate the 40-year-old ban. I don't think he could advance that idea on his own. I think he's got to be speaking for the government at large, and they're saying this may not be a bad idea. I don't mean it's necessarily going to happen, and certainly not this week. Right? But they're talking about it, and I think they want to end that ban. Now, this is interesting to me. This is intriguing to me because the ban on the sale of U.S. crude to foreign countries started, according to this report, 40 years ago. Thus, the ban began back around 1973. What else happened back about 1973? And the answer is the Nixon administration cut deals with Saudi Arabia and later with OPEC, whereby those oil-producing countries would guarantee to sell their crude oil only for U.S. dollars. By cutting this deal with Saudi Arabia and then OPEC, the United States, the Nixon administration, created petrodollars that were intrinsically worthless. This is after we'd gone off the gold standard in 1933 for domestic dollars and the silver standard by 1968 for silver. And come 1971-72, they cut a deal and said, look, if you guys will guarantee to sell your crude oil only for dollars, we will protect Saudi Arabia, for example, against invasion from anybody. And that's what we did with Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia took the deal. The result was, because the world had to have dollars in order to buy Saudi oil, the dollar became implicitly backed by crude oil. It was no longer backed by silver, no longer backed by gold, but it was backed by crude oil. And the dollar, which was intrinsically worthless, actually had a value. Right? This value was enhanced when OPEC took some sort of a deal, and I don't know what the deal was with OPEC, but they also agreed they'd only sell their crude oil for dollars. Saudi Arabia and OPEC were holding the dollar up. They were supporting its value. And this support continued until Saddam Hussein, back about 2000, he said, I'm going to start selling Iraqi crude for currencies other than the dollar. And the dollar began a decline in value on the U.S. dollar index, that where it lost a third of its value over the ensuing years. And we invaded Iraq and eventually hanged Saddam Hussein. And almost certainly the real reason they had weapons of mass destruction, a bunch of other crapola. The real reason is he had the audacity to sell Iraqi crude for currencies other than the dollar. This was big. This was important, that the dollar would be the only currency in the world that you could use to buy oil on the international market. Insofar as that was true, the dollar had value. People had to get dollars in order to buy crude oil. So that's what started back about 1972. And here we have this note that the restriction on the sale of United States crude to foreign countries also started about the same time. Now, we can presume that part of the deal with the Saudis and part of the deal with OPEC to support the U.S. dollar included a promise by the federal government to stop competing with the Saudis and stop competing with OPEC by selling American crude oil on the international market. In other words, in order to protect the fiat dollar, the United States government prevented most U.S. crude oil production from being sold on international markets. We essentially said, we won't compete with the Saudis, we won't compete with OPEC, but you got to promise, you guys, you Saudis, you OPEC guys, you got to promise you will only sell your crude oil for paper dollars, fiat dollars. Everybody took the deal. Now, the United States oil industry and the U.S. Energy Secretary Ernst Moniz are advocating a restoration of the sale of U.S. crude to foreign countries. If that restoration actually takes place, will it constitute a break in the former agreements with the Saudis and OPEC? Will those agreements, which were intended to support the value of the dollar, will those agreements therefore die? And if those agreements die, will the U.S. fiat dollar lose its last vestige of backing as a petrodollar? And once the dollar has lost its backing from silver, and then from gold, and then from silver, and now from oil, what will the value of the dollar be? Will the fiat dollar therefore suffer a significant loss of value if government reopens the sale of U.S. crude to foreign countries? If so, we could expect the price of gold to rise significantly. If they open the sale of crude oil to foreign countries, we can expect a jump in the price of gold. But more importantly, if the United States government is preparing to allow the sale of United States crude oil to foreign countries, and if such sales are likely to strip the fiat dollar of much of its apparent value, does that mean that the U.S. government is close to a moment when they will allow the value of the fiat dollar to fall dramatically? Is the government getting ready to give up on the fiat dollar? If so, what will replace it? What will protect against loss of enormous wealth in the event of a currency reset where the government says, look, we're going to let the dollar take a dive and we're going to start selling crude oil overseas? Now, I can't tell you that the conjecture that I've just expressed necessarily is true. I'm not going to say that. But I am saying that it's interesting. I'm saying that it's a plausible analysis of the current state of affairs relative to the oil industry and whether or not they'll be allowed to start selling in foreign countries. And what do you think, Melody? Does it sound plausible? Just another conspiracy theory? Irrational? Do you agree, disagree?
No, I mean, I agree. I think it's just another stone in the water. It shows that things are very uncertain out there for the fiat dollar. No one wants it. I mean, we see that with the rates of, the 10-year yield rising. And certainly this, we're shipping one of our biggest exports now is natural gas. So absolutely. And so they do have a plan, and it doesn't seem like they really care whether the dollar loses the value, continues to no longer be the reserve currency.
I understand, and
it
really does imply that they may terminate. They're just going to terminate the gold, the dollar's backing as a petrol currency. If they allow, you know, U.S. industries to sell overseas and compete with the Saudis and compete with whatever's left of OPEC, those countries are going to say, "Well, we're not going to continue to just sell our crude oil for dollars. We'll take other currencies as well." And when that happens, the dollar is going to take a dive.
Which means
it is strange that they're considering this, and it's being advocated by the Secretary of Energy.
Which means they no longer want the U.S. dollar to be the reserve currencies, that they're willing to accept maybe a unit of trade accepted by all nations. Maybe that is what they need to do in order to break that relationship as the reserve currency, in order to usher in the what I believe is going to be a basket of currencies by many of the big trading countries.
What I've seen is that there are at least reports what they plan to do, and what some nations have perhaps already agreed to do, is to a currency reset where all the currencies of the world are established in a new relationship. Whatever it is, it might be that right now, I don't know what the Forex deal is on Mexican pesos rather than dollars, but who knows, maybe it's 10 pesos to a dollar. I don't know if it's true or false. I don't follow that market. But maybe they're going to reset, and they're going to say, okay, now we're going to do 5 pesos to a dollar. And we're going to reset all the currencies of the world, and when they get done with them, the currencies, once reset, they won't be able to vary relative to each other by more than 3, 4, 5%.
The only way they would be able to do that, to keep them within a selected amount, would be to have some sort of backing by gold. Because a statement on a piece of paper, a treaty, or whatever won't do it. So, again, you're going to have your major trading countries. I don't believe it's going to be every country in the world. I mean, there's just too small of countries to make any significant difference to, you know, whether they manipulate their currencies or not. I mean, you know, who's going to worry about, you know, the currency of Timbuktu? You know, no one. But I mean, your major currencies, they will enlarge the existing basket of currencies. They will throw China and many other currencies in there, and then I do believe gold will play a particular part in there.
It always does. It always does.
It's not going to be 100%. It'll be 25%, 30%, something like that, maybe even 10%. But that is the only way they would be able to prevent or to keep the currencies in a stated range.
Well, I don't know if they can even do what they're planning or what they, you know, for how long. It's like anything else. How long? It's not whether you can do it. How long can you do it? There's the question. And there's all sorts of things that people in positions of power can do, but how long can they be sustained? You know, you can fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time and so on. How long can you maintain one of these schemes if you get one up and running? My only point on this is this. If they can establish that the dollar has a new range and a new value that's essentially fixed relative to the English pound and the euro and every other currency in the world, and they can't vary by more than 3%, they will have established a global currency, even though there might be 100 different dollars, different measures. They will still be one currency having essentially the same value. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Thanks for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.